Balak. The Seder of Balak is an unusual Seder. There are not too many other Seders in the Torah. I know of one other one. There may be others. But we're going to speak about these two specifically. The Seder of Balak does not have any paragraphs in it till the end, where a new incident happens with Shechem, with the daughters of Moab or whatever. But the whole Sedra of Balak, Bilam, the curse, the blessing, is all one run-on, continuous flow without any paragraphs. Those are called parshios. It's a misnomer to call it Parshas HaShavua. It should be Parshios HaShavua, because Parsha is a paragraph. There are two kinds of paragraphs in the Torah. There's the kind of paragraph that is a stuma, where there's a nine-letter gap between this sentence and the next sentence, but they start on the same line, with a nine-letter blank space in the middle. And the Parsha Psucha, which is what's it called, where that what's it called, the sentence ends, there's a space of at least nine letters after that, and the next sentence starts on the next line, like a regular paragraph. So in Parshas Balak, there are no paragraphs. In one second, I'll tell you another Parsha, and we'll see the connection between them. Why not? Why is this Sedra partialist? Doesn't have any paragraphs. So the Chafetz Chaim says one idea. He says that the parshios, the paragraphs, are a sign when HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped teaching Moshe Rabbeinu and he had a chance to review and contemplate what he learned. So those are the stops where God gave him over a unit. Okay, now you review it, think about it, let's discuss it, then we'll go on. So the Chafetz Chaim says like this, what was the problem of Bilam? Why did Bilam, who had the same potential almost as Moshe Rabbeinu, end up a Bilam and Moshe Rabbeinu ended up a Moshe Rabbeinu? He said because Bilam never bothered to consider, review, or contemplate what God told him. They both had prophecy, but Bilam just let it pass him by, just took it in his stride, and Moshe Rabbeinu contemplated. He thought about it. It made an impression on him. It's like the Kutzker Rebbe, I think. Somebody came to him and bragged, I just learned the whole Shas. He said, fine, but what did the Shas teach you? If you can learn something, what did it teach you? What did you get from it? That takes contemplation, it takes thinking, it takes... So the Rav Anishim showed us that Bilam kept getting these prophecies, but he never bothered thinking about them. So he just was kept going, run on, run on. When you don't think about something, nothing makes an impression. Bilam was walking with his donkey, it started to talk. Nobody ever saw a talking donkey in his life. And Bilam answers it like it's spread. Because he didn't bother to think of what was going on. Everything was taken in his stride. So that was the problem of Bilam. And I have a proof to that Chafetz Chaim from a Midrash. The Midrash says that way back in Egypt, when God told Moshe to warn the people that he's bringing hail. So he told them the person that will bring his cattle and slaves into the house, they'll be saved from the hail. But if you leave it out in the field, they're going to be killed by the hail. So it says, Hayareis Tvar Hashem, the person who feared God, brought his cattle inside. And they were saved. Who was that, the Midrash says? Eov. Job. According to one opinion, Job lived during that period of history. He was an advisor to Paro. He was a God-fearing man. He believed Moshe. Better get the cattle inside. And the person who didn't put his heart to it, the Midrash says that was Bilam, left his cattle in the field. It doesn't say Bilam didn't fear God. It says he didn't take it to heart, meaning he never bothered to think. What does it mean? What's the implications here? He just heard what Moshe said and went on, and therefore he didn't bring his cattle inside. He could have been a God-fearing person, Bilam, but if you don't think, then being a God-fearing person doesn't help at all. You never take anything to heart. That was Bilam. So that's why Parshas Balak doesn't have paragraphs, to signify that that was the shortcoming of Bilam. No contemplation, no thought, no review, no stopping, everything just constant, going. That's the case. The other Sedra in the Torah that doesn't have paragraphs is Vayetze. What does Vayetze speak about? Yaakov in his sojourn in Laban's house. The Zohar says that Bilam was not a reincarnation, but he had a connection to Lavan. Lavan and Bilam had the same, they were connected together in the Shemalos. Lavan and Bilam were connected together. Not a reincarnation, but the neshama of Lavan had a connection to the neshama of Bilam. Bilam and Lavan were the same person. Not physically, but deep down. Something like that. So, right, Bilam was a Gilgul of Lavan. Whatever that means. If that's the case, then you can understand why Vayetze, which speaks about Lavan, also didn't have what's it called any parashias. For the same reason the Chafetz Chaim said Parshas Balak, which speaks about Bilam, didn't have it. Parshas Vayetze, which speaks about Lavan, also didn't have it. That's one interpretation. I was thinking of another idea. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara speaks about the authorship of the various books of the Tanakh. It says Moshe Kosef Sifro, the Parshas Bilam. Moshe wrote his book, and he also wrote the Parsha Bilam. So most of the commentaries ask the obvious question. The Parsha Bilam is part of the Torah. So he wrote his book, and he also wrote Parshas Bilam. So some say that Parshas Bilam is not what we have in the Torah, Sedra Balak. But it's a different collection of prophecies of Bilam that were not put into the Torah. We don't have that anymore. Moshe composed that prophetically. But most of the Mefarshim say it means what we have in the Torah. But they explain it in the following way. Most of the Torah was dictated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Moshe Rabbeinu, by God, as the things happened, and they were all witnesses to what was going on. Except for one incident. One incident really had nothing to do with Moshe and the Jewish people. It was happening totally without their knowledge. All of this with Balak and Bilam, and they weren't involved with the Jewish people directly. This was all happening behind the scenes. Moshe Rabbeinu got a prophecy of what had happened. But what was delivered to Moshe Rabbeinu was different than the rest of the Torah. The rest of the Torah was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu as it happened by the Ribbono Shel Olam, who explained whatever. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu was transferred to him the prophecies of Bilam, and he recorded them according to what God told him. But these were already prophecies that were brought into the world by Bilam himself, not by Moshe Rabbeinu. They were dictated to Moshe, but it's a different thing. To make that difference, to show that this is something different than the rest of the Torah. It was communicated a little bit differently than the rest of the Torah. Ultimately, it was communicated directly by God to Moshe Rabbeinu. But it went through a different metamorphosis than the rest of the Torah, so in order to make it different, the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't make any paragraphs to let me know this was like, transferred, copied from somewhere else to this place. That's a second idea. That does not explain why Vayetze is like that. The third idea I was thinking of is the following. In order to really understand the whole incident of Balak and Bilam, it really needs to be looked upon in the totality, not piecemeal. You have to see all the blessings together. You have to see why Balak hired Bilam, what he said, what he was willing to do, what he wasn't willing to do, how God changed his curses into blessings, and his prophecies that went till Yemos HaMashiach. Bilam, in the end of the Sedra, gives prophecies that have to do with when Mashiach will come. So you can't look at it piecemeal. You have to see it all together. It's meant to be something that's appraised as one entire unit. So there's no paragraphs. From the beginning of the incident till the end, look at it, and you'll only understand it if you look at the parts in light of the whole. Vayetze is the same thing. Vayetze is the first Golus. First Jew, Yaakov, went into Golus. In fact, the Jewish people were created in Golus. The 12 tribes were born, most of them, in Golus, except for the last one. So, you can't understand Golus piecemeal. You can't look at tragedies in Jewish history as individual things. There is a system. There is a process of redemption and destruction and exile, and you have to see it as an entire picture. That's why we don't mourn the various tragedies of Jewish history on separate days. When do we mourn them all? On Tisha B'Av. All of the things that happened different times during the year. The Crusades, the Gzeiros Tachbetad of Chmelnytsky, the burning of the Talmud in Paris. Many, many things are mentioned in the keynotes of Tisha B'Av. Why? because Jewish history is not fragments. It's an entire process that you have to understand from beginning to end. So you can't single things out. Even the Holocaust is part of the totality of Jewish history. So one day, when we mourn the totality of Jewish history tragedy, we put everything into perspective. Same thing with Vayetze. Vayetze can't be looked upon piecemeal. If you're dealing with Golus, you have to see it as a process, you have to see it in its totality, you can't see it piecemeal. You can't separate any tragedy from the totality of the process of Jewish history. So those are three reasons why the Sedra of Golok specifically has no paragraphs, and two of them apply also to the Sedra of Vayetze.